And now, the Great American Folk Show, a little place on the radio where we commune with you to share stories and sing some songs and talk to some good people with great voices. Bruce Sudano is on the program today. He's written hits for a diverse company of artists, such as Jermaine Jackson and his brother Michael Jackson, country great Reba McEntire, and his late wife, Donna Summer. On the show, he shares new tunes and the stories behind them, so stay tuned for that. Kip Crana is also on the program today. He's from Devil's Lake, North Dakota, but his musical nose, as you might say, led him to be one of the mainstays at the San Francisco Opera. He's going to shine some light on North Dakota's opera house traditions. What fun that's going to be. Plus, singer-songwriter Jackson Harden will perform a Dakota ode and new Americana music from Christine Irizarry. I'm Tom Brousseau. It's good to have you with us. I had the pleasure of hearing Gina Powers at the John Prine Tribute Show just a couple of weeks ago at the Fargo Theater. Lovely night. She absolutely wowed the audience with her voice and her storytelling. In addition to singing Prine's Angel from Montgomery, Gina stuck in an original tune, and it was a real hit. It's a song that was released earlier this summer on Pow Sing Records called Great Divide. Enjoy it now. We begin the show with Gina Powers.
In a little town just outside of Fargo, old timer sipping coffee at a Castleton cafe, and as the sun comes up in the heart of old Chicago, Lou Mitchell's baking donuts like he does most every day. I sing my songs from town to town, and one thing I have found, everyone is different, but we stand on common. I can see those stripes and stars, and they wave the same as they do in Arizona, and I know I'm still proud of who we are. And to my left and to my right, people trying to live their life, we see each other. From the lake.
Music has the power to reach beyond words, to touch on emotions we don't even realize we're experiencing, and sharing our stories, letting creativity be part of everyday life, connects us with ourselves and each other in a way that's deeply human. To me, art and life are woven together. It's not something you can undo. It reminds us we're not alone. It's what makes this journey richer, more honest, and ultimately more beautiful.
Just heard new music from North Dakota native Gina Powers right here on the Great American Folk Show. I'm Tom Brusseau. If you're just tuning in, a big welcome to you. You know, Bob Dylan once said, way back when he was first beginning his career in writing songs, he said that all the songs that he first wrote were wild. I think what he meant by that was not that his earlier songs didn't have a point, but perhaps they were free of objective. Take a song like It's All Right, Ma, I'm Only Bleeding. It says a lot, yes indeed. But what about I Don't Really Know? Eventually, one's craft is honed, and simultaneously the meaning becomes sharper. You take a different song, not by Bob Dylan, but by George and Ira Gershwin, a song called Nice Work. If you can get it, you can get it if you try. The lyrics were written by Ira, based on a cartoon that he came across in an English newspaper about two prostitutes discussing the challenges of their independent employment. Ira applied its meaning to the broader concept of love. With his brother George at the piano, the song was destined to become famous. Indeed, it was a number one hit, and it became a standard in the Great American Songbook. And the song itself is about the importance over anything else to fall in love, a power greater that lasts longer and goes deeper than fame and money. Well, maybe not as well known as the Gershwins. You know songwriter Bruce Sedano's work. He's He's been a hit maker since the 1970s, even co-wrote that one for his wife, Bad Girls, the late great Donna Summer. Bruce is back with a compelling new album that he calls Talking Ugly Truth, Telling Pretty Lies. He's going to join us in just a minute, but for right now, enjoy this title track. What I really appreciate about the learning artist is that they end up achieving their goals. Their own discipline is the thing that guides them there. Here's Bruce Sedano.
He tells her what she wants to hear. She's got her own twisted reality. It's late night sex and warm Belgian beer. They're living lives of stolen opportunity. Now she got more tattoo cool than him. He keeps the weapons buried in their waterbed. Dripping on the dark with the black light dim. They keep repeating stories they've already said. It's been a wild ride, filled with lows and highs. You take all your medicine in stride. Driving down the dark side with the shadows of the night. Talking ugly truth, telling pretty lies. Talking ugly truth, telling pretty lies. All that dirty money that got washed away, it all comes back to haunt you. Like a dog on bed. Just when you think you've made your great escape, you find another way to just get caught again. It's been a hard time. A truth no one denies. Make stupid choices and you pay the price. Rolling with the crazy down a crooked mind. Talking ugly truth, telling pretty lies. Nothing lasts forever, nothing's ever free. Better learn that lesson before it gets too late. Cause you don't see him coming when the man is on his way. Got you with your pants down around your knees. Fascination is Bonnie and Clyde. Didn't they see the way that story ends? Shot them all to pieces. The way to end your life. Talking ugly truth, telling pretty lies. Talking ugly truth, telling pretty lies. Just talking ugly truth, telling pretty lies.
Talking Ugly Truth, Telling Pretty Lies is a group of songs that touch on a number of topics, reflecting where we are in the world and where I am in my own life. It's my personal reaction, both emotionally and intellectually, to the things that are going on, both within and without. You know, I'm of a certain age, and as I listen back to this record, I can't deny that the underlying impetus that's driving these songs is age. I think there's a certain amount of wisdom acquired from living a long life that somehow gets reflected here. It starts with an appreciation for life. You know, whatever phase of life you are in, there are challenges. There are lessons to be learned. But at the end of the day, you want to come out of it with joy. Don't miss out on the joy. There is joy to be found. There's another song that touches on the concept of being quick to forgive, the importance of being quick to forgive. The title song itself talks about the undermining of truth. It tells the story of these two renegades who doing things the wrong way and think they're going to get away with it forever. But in reality, in the end, it almost always catches up with you. There's a song that's a prayer of asking God to take, you know, the weight off our shoulders. It's, you know, the ability to give it over and to not be, let our souls and our spirits be dragged down with the weight of the world, but to carry on with hope and optimism in the midst of it all. There's a song that touches on the amount of sacrifice that greatness requires. There's a song, it's called Under the Gun, that talks about the issues of gun control is where I'm going there, and you know, and how we can accept all these mass shootings in school and not realize that we need to have some gun reform. You know, and then there are a couple of songs that deal specifically with the age of that I am now in my life. It's one called, I call it the ultimate baby boomer song. It's called How'd You Get Here? It starts with, here's to the generation, the black and white TV. So that's that one. And then there's a basically spoken word called Navigating the Unforeseen. When you get to this chapter of your life, you're dealing with, on an everyday basis, you're confronting your mortality. It's a challenge. You know, life is always about facing fear. And I think that ultimately the fear of dying is a big one. And how we navigate that with grace and courage is an important thing. And faith. We march on through every phase with faith. Yeah. I think that's the record. This is Under the Gun. These days it seems we're always playing catch-up. Dizzy and exhausted, just trying to keep the pace. Been a lifetime of running, chasing after something, driven by a passion and fire. Now you hit a little slow down, it's up and off the road now, take a little pressure off. Been under the gun too long, under the gun too long. Far too many bullets, been under the gun too long. When did we become a country that would sacrifice the children? All in the name of freedom, twisted up in lies. When it's all about position, and anything for winning, the thirst for power drives your mind. Well, it's the ultimate betrayal. Throw truth under the table, kiss democracy goodbye. Been under the gun too long, under the gun too long. Been far too many bullets, under the gun too long. You can set the clock for yesterday, but you can't turn back time. You can't turn back time.
bang. Shot them down, bang, bang. They hit the ground, bang, bang. An awful sound. Bang, bang. Shot them down, bang, bang. They hit the ground, bang, bang. An awful sound. Been under the gun too long. Under the gun too long. Been far too many bullets. Been far too many bullets.
Bruce Sedano's new album, Talkin' Ugly Truth, Tellin' Pretty Lies, is out now. Thank you, Bruce, for being on the show. It's great to have you. I'm going to switch now to the subject of opera. I love the opera, in case you didn't know. Here's a little something about opera. Most opera houses, places of community, entertainment, and education, not necessarily opera, were once a staple of our North Dakota towns. Most have been repurposed or torn down, but a few remain. In fact, we've visited a few on the program over the past year. Today, we're going to hear from someone who grew up in North Dakota and made it to the big time of opera houses, the San Francisco Opera, one of the United States' most prestigious opera houses. His name is Kip Crana. He's from Devil's Lake, North Dakota. But don't let that name fool you, Devil's Lake. The original Sisseton and Wahpeton word got mistranslated somewhere along the way. It really meant holy or spirit water, certainly not Lucifer. Anyway, Kip Crana is from Devil's Lake, and he went on to attend the University of North Dakota, where he was actually a classmate of my father. Eventually, he made his way all the way to the Bay Area, where he became an administrator of the San Francisco Opera, an expert musicologist, and a total gentleman. Kip will not only talk about his journey from North Dakota to California, but he's going to shed light on the opera. Being the dramaturge means that you try to get every aspect of the production, the language, the story, who wrote it, where it came from, all of that you have to figure out to be able to tell the people who are actually doing the production of the opera. Is that kind of what it is that you do?
I summarize it by saying scholar in residence. In my case, dramaturg, you know, it's a German term, and almost all the German companies have a dramaturg who comes from the theatrical side of the industry rather than the music side. And very often they are directly involved in what we would think of as production style, presentation, interpretation. So, for example, if you're going to do this wild new version of Madame Butterfly and you decide she's wearing a cat suit and, you know, she's in a cage on the moon, which is maybe not too far-fetched in terms of some of the wild productions you see in Europe, a dramaturg would be involved in that, consulting with the director and the designers. I'm from the musical side of the business, you know, my training is in musicology. And starting here at UND, where I studied music, I come from the musical side of it, so I've dealt mainly with composers and librettists in developing new pieces, but how it's going to be shaped dramatically, the text and how the scenes unfold, where the climax is, you know, is our motivations clear? Do we really understand these characters?
In your experience, you have people all the time who are seeing opera for the first time and don't know what to expect. Had you ever given anybody any advice on how to prepare for the opera experience?
Oh, yeah, I do that all the time. And I try to do it keeping in mind that most people who come to an opera don't have much, nowadays, maybe no musical background at all. They may not have ever had a music class in school or certainly never played a musical instrument, had piano lessons or singing or anything like that. Often people come in with no real fundamental music experience of any kind. And so it's a matter of opening them up to the idea of what I call glorious singing. The Kip Crana definition of opera is intense human emotion expressed in storytelling through glorious singing. And people have to open them up, themselves up to that, because operatic singing is a kind of a different art form from what we mostly encounter in our lives, pop singing of whatever kind. The vocal production is different, the way it comes out, the way you use the diaphragm and the throat and so forth, and the way that notes are shaped, the vowels are shaped, the way the breath supports the tone. All that's a different technique. Just the way, you know, like gymnastics is different from wrestling. You know, they're using different parts of the body in different ways. So to me, I try to get people to open up to that. So this may not sound like Judy Collins or Beyonce or whoever your...
Tom Waits.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever, whoever your hero is. It's a different kind of, a different way of singing. And just relax and let that wash over you.
I'm remembering the scene in The Shawshank Redemption where Dufresne locks himself into one of the rooms, and at his disposal is this record machine.
Exactly.
And he puts on this gorgeous track. Do you remember the name
of it? I do, exactly, and I've used it often. He puts on, I remember the scene vividly because I've played it often in my PowerPoints. He contrives to lock the guard in the bathroom long enough. He gets out this LP and puts it on, and then he turns it on the loudspeaker. So it's heard all throughout the prison camp. And it's the letter duet from The Marriage of Figaro called Sularia. It's the countess and her maid are making up, they're writing this letter together to lure her husband into a trap where he's caught trying to seduce the maid. And it's this gorgeous music that, and as Morgan Freeman says in the voiceover, I had no idea what those two Italian ladies were singing about. To this day, I still don't know. I like to think it was about something so beautiful that it couldn't be expressed in words. And it's a wonderful sort of little capsule moment expressing what opera can do.
It is a gorgeous moment in that film. All the inmates are, they don't know why, but they're staring up at that speaker and they're thinking the exact same thing that Red, Morgan Freeman character, is expressing.
Yeah.
The movie. I just love that scene. And I think everybody in the movie theater, too, is also feeling that. They're feeling that, the power of the human voice.
Yeah, I think Morgan says that for that one tiny moment, all of us at Shawshank were free.
We're speaking with Kip Crana here today. Kip, I want to talk to you a little bit about your background, where you're from, and how you got interested in opera.
All right, so born and raised in Devil's Lake, North Dakota. Went to the University of North Dakota with the intention of becoming a high school music teacher. If you're familiar with, you're maybe too young to remember the film Mr. Holland's Opus.
I remember that well.
Which is about an inspirational high school music teacher. And I had one and sort of wanted to be like him. At UND, I also tried out for the opera workshop and kind of thought I was a singer. I sang, of course, in choirs. The UND was very helpful to point me in a different direction. I was offered mute parts a couple times, which kind of hinted that maybe I didn't have...
Well, literally, you're not singing at all.
Exactly,
you've got no, yeah.
Yes.
But you're out there as a body, but just...
Right,
yeah.
Saying nothing but acting up a storm. So it was becoming obvious to me that maybe a stellar operatic career was not, or singing career was not maybe in my future. Simultaneously, I had a teacher who was very interested in early music, music of the 16th, 17th century and so forth. And I got hooked on that too. So that's what I decided I would do. I would do research in that and become a college teacher. But there was a war. So I became a Navy officer and was stationed off the coast of Vietnam for a year on aircraft carriers. And then the Navy sent me in its wisdom to Naples, Italy. You know, join the Navy and see the world, as the saying goes, which I did. And in Naples, I was continuing to be interested in music. In a place like that, if you want to take in musical performances, you got to go to the opera. And I saw a lot of opera in Italy, never imagining at the time that my career would be in that field.
Well, at the San Francisco Opera, I know you worked with just the best of the best in the business.
One of the people that you worked with is Pavarotti. What was it like working with Pavarotti?
It was a phenomenon that was fascinating to watch. When I was at Stanford starting in 1972, my partner Bruce and I used to go up and get standing room. $3, and it only cost $3 to get a standing room. And of course, we were young and we could stand through operas, which tend to be, you know, 3 hours long or longer. And Pavarotti was just becoming a phenomenon in those days. And then when I started working on staff in 1979, he was more or less at the height of his popularity. And only then, starting into this crossover world, we started doing stadium concerts, not only with himself, but also with Plácido Domingo and José Carreras.
The tenors.
Three tenors. And we never did a three tenors concert with them, but we did at least two of those stadium concerts, which is Luciano Alone.
Was sometime. That controversial at all in that world, that he was doing stadium tours, that he was singing with Eric Clapton and Sting? And I mean, what was the news in the world of opera?
Some of the tried and true sort of traditionalists thought he was, you know, polluting the stream. You know, he was degrading the art form. But I think in general we were heartened. You know, if you can get 30,000 people at the Oakland Coliseum. It was pretty exciting to see these people enjoying operatic entertainment.
We grew up knowing that there's an opera house here in Grand Forks. And there's opera houses actually all over in North Dakota, as there are in every state. Every town had an opera. If there was a railroad that went through the town, they probably had an opera house.
Devil's Lake had one.
Devil's Lake, Minot, Ellensdale, Mattock. All had opera houses, probably not doing operas now. I know Fargo is doing operas.
There were really what we would think of as vaudeville houses.
Vaudeville.
And they would occasionally do operatic programs that would be typically potpourri evenings of operatic selections mixed in with more popular stuff.
Yeah. One last question to ask you, Kip. In all of your years doing what you do, San Francisco Opera, what is the thing, do you think, that makes you in it, that makes you a fan for life, that makes you want to come back to it again and again? Not only that, that makes you enthusiastic about it to tell other people about it. What is that thing with the opera?
What draws me back time after time is that excitement about the possibility of a really thrilling evening. They're rare because it's so hard to get it all right. I can't remember who said this quote, but it was a woman who said, opera happens because an amazing number of things fail to go wrong. And when that happens, when all those amazing things fail to go wrong, and you have the right piece, the right singers, the right conductor, the right production, and the right audience, all those things come together on a really special night where you can sense the excitement in the room. There's really nothing like it.
Our guest today has been Kip Crana. Kip, thank you so much for being on the Great American Folk Show today.
It's a pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
Support for the Great American Folk Show comes from the John and Elaine Andrews Charitable Trust, the estate of Blair Flegel, the Lorac family, and Minn Kota Power Cooperative, helping meet the electricity needs of rural member cooperatives in eastern North Dakota and northwestern Minnesota. Our power is our people. More information at minnkota.com. It's nice to have you along for the show today. Thanks for being here. I'm Tom Brousseau. Hope you're having an excellent day. We continue with a live session today from a working songwriter whom I greatly admire out of Philadelphia. Her name is Christine Irizarry. Let's go to that live session right now.
Hi, Great American Folk Show. I'm Christine Irizarry. I am a musician, a storyteller, and a mom of four. My journey into music has not been typical. It has been about rediscovering and remembering who I am and embracing a passion that I not only put aside, but for most of my life told myself was not for me. I spent years following what seemed like the quote-unquote right path, college, earning a degree, becoming a teacher, and in 2009, I became a mom for the first time. I dove into motherhood with my whole heart, and I have not a single regret about that. But as my kids grew and started school themselves, I found myself feeling a bit lost. Like many parents, I had poured so much into my family that I forgot about being myself. I forgot myself, and I forgot that what I had always needed was music just to breathe. And then in 2013, everything started shifting. I began pursuing musical outlets, initially in the form of karaoke and as the backup singer to an Elvis impersonator. Through that, I met Seth Aaron, who has become my musical partner. We hit it off, started talking about music, started writing together, and the rest is kind of history. It was like something came alive and a light turned on. I realized I didn't have to choose between being a mom and being an artist, and I found a way that I could be both. Since then, I've become a full-time musician. I have released 2 EPs and several singles. Music, for me, it's more than melodies and words. It's a way to tell stories that connect us all. My music is about creating spaces where listeners can feel deeply, where they can be transported and maybe even healed. And every song, every lyric is meant to resonate with the experiences that shape our lives. As a mom, I've been through my share of challenges, and in life, I've been through my share of challenges. And as my kids get older, I'm so grateful that they get to see their mom pursuing her passion and making music and staying true to who she is. Tonight, I have the pleasure of sharing a brand new song with you live. It's called Circles. It is about the unexpected pain of losing a close friend. Often we talk about the end of relationships and we're speaking about romantic relationships. We don't often touch on the true and deep pain that it is to lose somebody that you thought was absolutely going to be with you until the end, where you thought trust went both ways and then suddenly it unravels. It's a song about feeling unheard, misunderstood, and the heartbreak that comes when someone you thought you knew so deeply and who you thought knew you so deeply no longer sees you as you truly are. I have been there, and this song is for anyone else who has felt that same ache. So once again, thank you so much to the Great American Folk Show for this platform, for having me here tonight. And here it is, Circles. I hope this song connects with you the way that it has with me.
Never. You wouldn't really walk away, you'll come around. Timing, it's just the timing. After some space, we'll be okay. Why can't
One of the commonalities of the guests on the show, not just this year, but kind of like in all the years that we've been doing this for 5 years or something like that, is the importance of that warm place that we call home. I mean, let's face it, we are inspired by where we come from. We're downright proud of it. Seems especially to be a wellspring for songwriters. I mean, their surroundings often make it into their lyrics. Take Country Roads, for example, by John Denver.
Dark and dusty, painted on the sky, misty taste of moonshine, teardrop in my eye, country road.
Our Sweet Home Chicago by Robert Johnson.
I turn to his four, burden to his six. You're gonna keep on mucking around your friend, boy, he's gonna get you. Been a song and a trick, but I'm crying, baby. Honey, don't you want to go?
More recently, well, maybe not so recently now. It's been like 24 years since Emmylou Harris released Red Dirt Girl, but that title track is all about location.
But there won't be a mention in the news of the world or the life and the death of a red dirt girl named Lillian, who never got any further across the line.
Certainly, the feeling of location, it can be translated into sound. It's not just limited to lyrics. Ennio Morricone, his theme, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, it's a good example of that. The refrain is, well, it mimics the call of a hot, dusty, desolate, western, rugged landscape coyote. You know what I'm talking about.
Nah, wah, wah, wah.
That's terrible. Our next guest is Jackson Harton, and he poignantly points out the virtues of this program by paying homage to a location meaningful to him, and what do you know, it's the Peace Garden State.
Hi, my name is Jackson Harton, and I'm a singer-songwriter currently based in Charlotte, North Carolina. I think that places have a powerful influence on music. Where you are from is a great sense of pride for oneself. I think for musicians especially. In most musicians' bios, often the first thing that is shared is where they are from, right after their name, like I just did. I think this is because we all intuitively know that where someone is from says a lot about them and their sound. Where one grows up tends to have an inevitable way of seeping into the music of that musician. As listeners of this show, I'm sure you know this well by now and have a great sense for this. The format of this show shines a light on this very idea by highlighting artists from all over the country every week. Part of the appeal of listening to music is that it takes you somewhere else, often in an actual physical place. Many songs are about or mention places in them. Songwriters can't resist it. Different places have their own unique music scenes and signature sounds. This is why I personally am drawn to visit certain places. The music that comes from them is a great tourism advertisement for me. I want to see what it is about these places that brought out that particular sound. I was born and raised in Utah, and that has certainly influenced my music. Its towering mountains and vast desert landscapes have no doubt shaped my sound as well as my lyricism. A couple of years ago, I moved to North Carolina. I'm sure my newest music is starting to and will adopt the sound of North Carolina in some way or another, as this new ecosystem becomes a part of my consciousness. I also think that just visiting a place once as a tourist and outsider can inspire a new song or a whole album's worth of songs. Even merely reading about or seeing a picture or a video of a place can be a powerful enough source of inspiration. I think where music really gets interesting is when all of these places that one has been or lived in mix together to form a fresh blend of sounds. This is how many genres and styles of music were originally formed, after all, by people migrating from other places and bringing their sound with them and mingling with the other sounds already in that place. My latest release, an EP titled Dakota Blue Moon, was inspired by North Dakota, a place that I have only visited once in my life, but has impacted me so much as to find its way into my music. One of my favorite films and TV series, Fargo, planted the first seed as a teenager and gave me a romanticized admiration for the Midwest. Later, I met my partner of 4 years, Anna, who spent most of her life in a small town at the heart of North Dakota called New Rockford. I had the honor of going back and visiting with her a couple of years ago during the prime golden window of autumn, and it only reinforced this appreciation further. This then inspired me to write the title track of said EP, which explores the feelings that our fresh relationship invoked in me, using imagery from the terrain of her homeland as an analogy. I will play this for you now. After that, I will play a song called Shadow Puppets off of the same EP that my partner Anna Rose Smith helped me write and sings with me. Shadow Puppets was inspired by Utah Valley, with the large lake at the heart of it, with mountain ranges surrounding it 360 degrees around. I hope you enjoy these songs. Thank you for listening. Thank you.
Light up at night, little house. Salt in the valley below. Taking pictures of pretty places. Oh, how time's pace is so slow right now. So
time just flies right by. Hope you enjoyed the program today. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks to our guests. You just heard Jackson Harden, and we started off the program today with Gina Powers. Bruce Sudano was on the program. Kip Crana of the San Francisco Opera House, originally from Devil's Lake, North Dakota, was on the program too. Opening theme by Sean Watkins in Los Angeles, California. End theme by Burkham Boys in Council Bluffs, Iowa. Mary Jones is the talent producer. Elizabeth Brousseau helps out with the digital realm of the Great American Folk Show. Eric Dethridge is the producer and editor, and Ann Alquist is the director. Support for the Great American Folk Show comes from the John and Elaine Andrust Charitable Trust, the estate of Blair Flegel, the Lorac family, and Minn Kota Power Cooperative. I'm Tom Brusso. May you always find the sun until we meet again.
Thank you.